RadioMD. RadioMD.com.
Get healthy, be healthy, stay healthy. It's the Power of Health with Dr. Jeffrey Burke.
Today we have a lot of confusion in our life, and it comes from almost every part of our life today. My goodness, just turn on the television and you'll see confusion. But we also have a lot of confusion in our marketplace, and the marketplace being the nutrition marketplace. We need to get a better understanding of what we're purchasing and the idea and how to read a label on our probiotic products, what to look for. And I can't think of a better thing to do today than to talk about the word strains, because we bring that up periodically. Natasha definitely uses the word strains. So Natasha, when people hear the word strains, what is a strain?
Well, you know, microbiology is a complex science, mm-hmm. and a strain is truly the individual bacteria sister colonies that are unique in the species. For instance, you can have, you can equate it to like dogs. You can say, oh, well, we have a species of German Shepherds, but, you know, the strain is Rin-Tin-Tin, you know, for example, or the, you know, canine dog that goes along that's been trained with the police person. So you can say that all German Shepherds have the potential, but now we know that this strain specifically can do what the other members of the strain have a species have a potential to do, but this strain can really do this work for us. And it's not just having the strain, it's the proper listing of the strain and having somebody verify that you actually have the strain available for sale. That's the catch, because if you don't have the right strain, the product will not be as efficacious. And, you know, you won't know if the product is working or not, because you're just taking some element of some bacterial species that you have no idea if it survived the processing, if it survived shipping, if it survived warehousing. So the strain is very important if we know what specific benefits we're going to get from this probiotic product. And I can tell you that virtually 99% of the products do not list strains. They just list species, and it looks like a spilt alphabet soup on the label, and I feel sorry for the poor consumer, because without the standards being enforced, the consumer is really at the mercy of the marketing company selling this product, which they don't even make. And so arming the consumer, whether it be a doctor, an individual, or a health food store owner, is so important if we're going to get this a concept of probiotics under control and really allow it to do the good that it needs to do.
So basically, the strains is kind of like the pedigree, if you will, or the genetics.
Yeah, the genetics. So for instance, let's say you have twin brothers.
Okay.
And they both have the genetic capacity, but only one brother trains to be an Olympic champion. Okay? So uh-huh. Can you substitute the other brother to be the Olympic champion who's had no preparation for it? No. Mm-hmm. You see, that's what the strain is. The strain is not only the selection of the, you know, individual bacteria, but it's how prepared is it according to published research to really do what it's supposed to do. And that's where the failure comes down, because people can list the strain, but nobody knows if really that strain is in the product unless you have a third party verifying that that's really there and it functions according to published research.
Well, today when you read labels, you see things, you see numbers. Obviously, when I first started in the field, my goodness, almost 40 years ago, the numbers were much lower back then. Today, the numbers are much higher. Is there an actual way of counting or measuring the actual strains and the bacterial count? I mean, is that what these numbers are? Are they counted, measured numbers?
Well, what it is nobody knows. You know, that since one contract manufacturer is making virtually 90% of the mm-hmm. products that have multiple strains, mm-hmm. Once you mix up these strains, it's very difficult to discern, first of all, what the product has. And what they're doing now is adding to the confusion by trying to make one contract manufactured product stand out by giving them high numbers. But actually, the high numbers are only attributed to maybe a single organism that's in the product that's probably stressed and not going to perform very well, even though it has these high numbers, because it's been put in a capsule or in a bottle with other bacteria that's going to compete with it, make it weaker, and by the time you get it, you're going to have a poor functioning probiotic bacteria that will not give you the results it has. And meanwhile, you're confused thinking, oh, the more species or strains people list on their label, the better for me. Well, that's not the truth at all, not according to published research. Because published research says you have to know what active ingredients you have in the product in order to get the desired effect. So if you have this, what I call, listing of just microbes on a label, it means nothing. What is actually alive after the shelf life in the time you consume the product, and can those bacteria survive stomach acid and bile to actually do any good in your GI tract? So even if you have 100 billion, let's say, and that bacteria doesn't survive well on the shelf, and only one of those bacteria survive, and the rest are probably not even there or probably dead by the time you consume it, you're just buying a nice story, is what it is off the shelf, because it is a very confusing science, and the fact that people don't understand it, they can be duped. Let's put it this way, that if you're cell phone was to operate the way these probiotic products are sold, nobody could make a connecting call. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for us, we can't really measure the effects that the probiotic is having because we're still very ignorant. And people, even doctors who think, oh, I'm getting this probiotic and it comes from a company that sells nutrients to the doctor has no idea who's actually making this product, who's actually checking this label, and what he's really giving to his patients. And that's what we need to change, because unless we can measure the specific bacteria that people are ingesting and the specific amount, which has to be an amount that survives, like I said, processing, shipping, warehousing, storage, stomach acid, and bile, you're not going to have a measure of the results that you can obtain from a probiotic product. And I hope that makes sense.
It does. It makes good sense. So my question comes next. Why are there different strains needed for health? I mean, I know one misconception is that, you know, basically a probiotic is a probiotic is a probiotic, obviously, and that is so far from the truth. But there are different strains. And as a manufacturer, how do you know which strains to make, which ones are the more important, and how are they applied?
Well, first of all, I want to get away from the word strains because, you know, the way I've been in this field for 45 years. And, you know, you have to choose the strains, number one, for its safety, mm-hmm. and number two, for its efficacy. And bacteria are very opportunistic entities. They don't do anything that's not in their interest to dominate and survive. So if you put in a bacteria that doesn't like to live in a specific area of the intestinal tract, guess what? It's not going to stay there. Not going to waste its cellular energy trying to take up residence in your GI tract unless it finds that to be the perfect environment for it to thrive. I hope that makes sense.
So rather than strains, we call them bacteria then?
Right.
Okay, good. I got it. Okay, thank you.
So here's this bacteria now. Let's talk about Lactobacillus acidophilus. And the reason I do that is because it's the organism that's had the most amount of study behind it. And, you know, I have been affiliated with the DDS strain and the NAS strain for well over 35 years. So I know a little bit about the strains. Now, lactobacilli are something we called facultative anaerobes. And so before you start scratching your head and say what Natasha is saying, what it means is that the bacteria likes to live in the presence of oxygen and possibly in some pockets where there is no oxygen. So that's the small intestine. So that's the habitat it likes to, you know, live in, and it will be become a good competitor to knock off the not-so-desirable bacteria off the intestinal wall, because now this is a habitat it likes and it wants to live there. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. And how does the acidophilus do this? By the production of antimicrobial products called bacteriocins or hydrogen peroxide. And, you know, it becomes a good competitor when you arm this strain of Lactobacillus acidophilus with the proper environment so it can express these wonderful properties of producing these antimicrobials and hydrogen peroxide to become a good competitor, so it can take up, you know, parking spaces on your intestinal wall instead of an undesirable bacteria. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So then I, you know, based on my research and 20 years of collaboration with the top researcher in the world with bifidobacteria, bifidobacteria are very important because they're something we called obligate anaerobes. What does that mean? It means that it likes to live in an oxygen-free environment. And so where is the oxygen-free environment? It's the large intestine. And the large intestine is probably the only place in the body you can have a dominant amount of beneficial bacteria, usually in the second or third position behind other bacteria. And that's usually your bifidobacteria. So that is a very important microorganism, and it has to be a specifically good bifidobacterium. I like bifidum. I've done research on this for 20 years. Again, this bacteria has to be able to survive, you know, stomach acid. It has to be bile tolerant. It has to be able to reach its destination, which is the large intestine, to thrive. And that's so important because bifidobacteria is part of our waste and disposal system, making sure that toxins are eliminating through our waste matter and not sent back to the liver and burden the liver. As you know, that the portal vein connects from the large intestine to the liver, and about 60% of the bacteria can go into the liver. So you, if you don't have a predominance of bifidobacteria, it puts a huge burden on the liver. And we're seeing a phenomenon now in the last couple of decades, what we call a non-alcoholic fatty liver conditions, which is attributed to the lack of good composition of beneficial bacteria in the large intestine. Does that make sense?
Yes, perfect sense.
Okay. So now the third bacteria that I chose is there's something called the transient flora. Now, what is the transient flora? Remember, every time you eat, you know, it hits your stomach. You know, there's digestion taking place because the stomach acid acts as a barrier against all bacteria and helps to break down proteins. And then once that, you know, first part of digestion is done, it's dumped into the small intestine, where the digestive process is completed through carbohydrate breakdown, and, you know, absorption starts taking place in the small intestinal wall. As this, you know, food is pushed down the intestinal wall by something called the peristaltic action, there is an amount of bacteria that's always going through along with this food that is being digested and broken down to hopefully the right molecular size so your body can get nourished. And it's very important that as this food goes down the intestinal wall, that it has, you know, accompanying bacteria. So as the other bacteria glob on to this food that's coming in, that there's some control of this, you know, what eventually becomes chyme as it goes down into the large intestine, and then it becomes waste matter. So this transient bacteria is very important because I said earlier in the show that up to 40% of our dry weight fecal matter is bacteria. And this transient bacteria, like the Lactobacillus bulgaricus that I use, not only helps to predigest the food, which is a unique feature, but it also helps with the peristaltic action, which means the transit time, which is the time that you start chewing your food, that it exits to the other end, is approximately, you know, 8 to 24 hours. In other words, you want to have a bowel movement every day if you are processing and eliminating your food in a timely fashion. So that's why I choose these three bacteria. By choosing bacteria indiscriminately and just throwing them into a formula without specific designations and choosing them so that they want to stay in that environment and thrive in that environment is really a waste of time and money.
I
hope I explained that.
You did, and this is really, really making good sense, and I appreciate that because, you know, we have to remember that obviously the controls to maintain these bacteria and these numbers, that's part of the process that we haven't even got to yet, because it's not just the creation, it's also the maintenance, you know, and almost every other factor of the world. You know, you make a product, the product is done, it's finished, and it goes on a shelf, and it can sit there for a day, a week, a month, a year, 10 years, because it's ready to go. It's completely different when you're talking about bacteria, because the controls, the maintenance of the potency and the quality, you know, that hasn't even begun to be discussed. So that's part of it. Oh, once you clarify.
Oh, exactly. Well, first of all, you know, when, let's look at the notion of what we call the shelf-stable products, which is a complete, you know, deception for the public. Because what these so-called manufacturers, the people who sell these products, whether on the shelf or in the refrigerator, don't make these their own products. And it's very clever marketing that should be challenged, because shelf stability, what they're referring to, is that the product can survive under laboratory conditions. And the laboratory conditions are usually 70 to 72 degrees. They talk about nothing about transportation and how these bacteria can be affected in transportation. Plus, the ignorant consumer will not treat the probiotic product as a perishable, but will assume it's indestructible and will throw it in a hot trunk, will throw it, you know, will put it up on the windowsill, will not take care of it as a perishable. And a probiotic bacteria must be handled as a perishable, regardless of what the so-called manufacturer tells you. And that's why it's so important for the consumer to be aware of the standards, because without standards and without some independent agency that is not, you know, being paid by the marketing companies that sell these products to so-called, you know, give them a certification, is what gives the consumer a false an idea that this product is really in some way or shape or form efficacious. Now, let me explain to you further why this whole shelf-stable concept should be eliminated for all probiotic products. Because, you know, when the product is shipped, the American Automobile Association has stated that if the temperature outside is 80 degrees Fahrenheit, within 20 minutes, it will become 120 degrees inside a car. And this temperatures were measured for child safety. Inside a UPS truck or a FedEx truck, and it can reach 140 degrees. So there are no stats showing how these products survive under that kind of exposure. And even if the temperature is cool but not controlled, the change in the temperature can cause the availability of water from the environment that the products can soak up. And this water activity will wake up the bacteria in the capsule or the bottle and facilitate too fast the growth, and the bacteria will die. So we have to, you know, completely eliminate any product that claims to be shelf-stable, and then we can, you know, in the next segment talk about how we're going to discern the products that are in the refrigerator.
Well, I think today what we're learning is that bacteria are very, very viable. They're very sensitive. We have to make sure that the correct strains are produced and produced under stringent laws and regulations. We have to make sure that the numbers are there and that the numbers can be sustained. We have to also deal with the controls of those bacteria once they are done. And then we have to have an understanding of exactly which of the strains are the most beneficial for us. This is a very, very, you know, large category of information. But you know what? With education comes knowledge, and with knowledge makes better decisions. And when it comes to our good health, what we need today is not only the knowledge, but we need the education, and then we need the consistency and the integrity of the product. But at the same time, we need to be able to make sure that we're making the best decisions we can possibly make for our great health. And it means being aware and enlightening ourselves and staying up to date on exactly what the idea of probiotics are all about. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Burke, and this is The Power of Health on Radio MD. For more information on this and all my segments, visit my show page at radiomd.com. Thanks for listening, and stay well.